You're with Cape Talk.
This is Pippa Hudson on Lunch.
Now, in April this year, when ginger prices had shot through the roof, you may recall we chatted to gardening guru Jane Griffiths about the possibility of growing your own ginger and talked about how time-consuming and tricky a job or otherwise that might be if you would consider it. You probably know Jane as a writer, a TV producer, an artist, and the producer of an array of best-selling books on food gardening, on growing herbs, on urban gardening, and on cooking with the resulting produce. And her latest book is really one that spans her two passions for growing the food and then using it in her own kitchen. It's called Jane's Delicious Superfoods for Super Health. It's published by Sunbird Publishers, and it's all about tapping into the nutritional possibilities of our food gardens and also talking about what to do to make our produce not only nourish us well, but also last us a long time. Jane's Delicious Superfoods for Super Health. Lovely to have Delicious Jane herself with us on the line. Lovely to have you back on the show, Jane.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, and you?
Good, enjoying spring. It really does feel like, I don't know about you guys down there, but September is a warm spring weather up here, and it's fabulous.
We're having a day of spring, or at least a morning of spring. I should not be too hopeful. Jane, Cape Town does its thing.
It changes every hour.
Exactly. Now, Jane, it's a gorgeous book, and it's like a sort of an encyclopedia of fresh produce married with suggestions on what to do with it and how to make the most of it for the purposes of nourishing ourselves. Superfoods, a controversial term. I don't know if anybody's ever really properly defined what that is. So maybe the thing to do is to ask you what you mean by a superfood.
Well, for me, you're right. There is no scientific definition of superfood. For me, it is food, any food that is packed full of nutrition, various different compounds, various different elements. But for me, what is most important about it is taking it back to food that is as close to its original form as possible. So taking processed foods out of the equation, bringing back healthy, wholesome cooking using whole ingredients. And that's what this book is about. It's exploring all of those ingredients and a range of ingredients that either you can grow at home or you can get from your local greengrocer or supermarket or health store, and how to use them so that it benefits your health.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Jane, your own experience of growing your own food has clearly influenced the way you eat and the way you cook that produce. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about how your eating habits have changed over the years that your gardening expertise has grown?
Absolutely. The two go, you're so right, the two go hand in hand. And this book, it has its roots way back to 1995 when I first started growing my own organic food and herbs and fruit. And part of that journey was realizing, first of all, the soil and how bad toxic chemicals and pesticides are for the soil, and learning more and more about working with nature to grow healthy organic food. It made me start questioning what I was putting into my own body. And I started reading labels, and I started looking at the source of my food. Where was it grown? Where was it coming from? What was in it? What was in my food? And the more I explored that, the more I started realizing how much healthier it was for me to first of all grow my own food and then use various different methods in both creating fresh meals that we can eat that I've harvested literally 1 hour before from the garden, and also preserve those so that I can eat tomatoes in the middle of winter by using tomatoes that I've preserved myself, or squash or basil or winter broccoli into summer. And all of those methods are so linked between, my growing journey and realizing how what we eat is, and changing what we eat can really be the first step in creating a healthier body. I used to eat very unhealthily. In my 20s, I didn't cook at all, hardly. I mean, I knew how to make a very quick tuna salad, and I think I knew how to bake a potato. And that was kind of it. I was very busy, and I grabbed takeaway foods. I ate very unhealthily. And I saw the results in my own body when I started growing my own food and also starting to cook my own food from scratch. Mm-hmm. A lot of things like hay fever, for example, allergies, just immediately started lessening, reducing with getting rid of preservatives. I've realized as well, once you start looking at the labels, and I realize, aha, there's the parallel. If I eat that, I start getting an asthma, I start getting wheezy, and you start understanding your own body and start understanding what you're putting into it.
Just for those who might have joined us late to the conversation, my guest on the line from Joburg is Jane Griffiths, the author of Jane's Delicious Superfoods for Super Health. Jane, I mean, there's so much to talk about in this book. There are chapters on the vegetables, on the herbs, on the grains, on the nuts and seeds, and on the different types of produce, the algae, the fungi, all kinds of interesting things, looking at the produce within those categories, looking at the history of how they've been used by humans. My ears really picked up, or rather my eyes did, when I got to the section on grains, because I think a lot of aspiring do-it-yourself foodies are going to be quite inspired by the chapter on grains that even speaks to the details of milling your own flour at home. Jane, if you'd said that to me before I looked at the book, I would have said that's way too intimidating. It's going to be too difficult. You make the case for it not being an impossible job.
No, not at all. And, you know, you tend to think of something, and grains are a very interesting one because especially wheat, it's received a really bad rap over the last 10 to 15 years. It's becoming more and more, people don't want to eat any grains. They don't want to eat any wheat. But if you go back, and this is what I found so fascinating about exploring and researching this book, is going into the history of our foods and going into the history of how we've messed up, royally messed up some of our foods. And grains are a very good example, where highly processed white flour, for example, comes from a history of mechanization and development of grinding methods and the process that we use, and also changing the actual wheat that we grow. And when we start thinking about, there was a whole sourdough revolution during lockdown, and I think a lot more people are more aware of making our own bread. And the next step from making your own sourdough bread, where you're literally harvesting wild yeast from the air to make your dough and to make the sourdough starter, is to grind your own grain. And you don't have to spend a fortune on going and buying the really expensive home milling. There are some very beautiful ones out there. And if you do plan to do it in a big scale, then yes, invest in something like that. But you don't have to. You can actually just use one of these cup blenders. Some of them come with an attachment that is a milling attachment. Okay. It's a grinding attachment that you basically put a cup full of wheat berries, which are the seeds, pop it in there, grind, press it, grind, and then you can just sieve it using a normal sieve from your own that you use to sieve your cake flour, and voila, you've got the freshest flour, and you can choose a wide variety of grains. You can go back to using a spelt grain, for example, which is one of the ancient grains, and it hasn't been affected by all the modern hybridizing that a lot of the wheat has been affected by. And many people will find that if they are gluten intolerant, if they start doing this and start introducing a little bit of home ground wheat into their diet, they won't have the same effect.
Jane, it's fascinating. I mean, the chapter on making your own nut milk as well really caught my eye, because I know it's such a sought-after product in some ways, and also such a problematic one in some ways, because a lot of people think, well, I'm doing the planet a favor by moving away from dairy, because we know what mass dairy farming does to the planet. But then they don't consider that the nut milk that they're buying might be imported and have a carbon footprint way in excess of what is anyway healthy for the planet, and might come from a monoculture sort of setting. You make the case for saying make your own out of the ingredients that are within a hand's reach. How easy or difficult is that?
Look, it's really easy. One of the things that it is easy, and you don't need a lot of equipment. But I absolutely agree with you. Nut milk is a controversial one in that it's too many nuts can be used for it if you go overboard. And this is, you know, then it's the whole, you know, nuts, the production of nuts, how detrimental is that compared to the production of dairy milk? Mm. And one of the things that I go on about, and it's also, it goes back to my gardening journey and ongoing gardening journey, is one of the things that is vitally important in successful organic gardening is balance. A balance between the good insects and the bad insects, a balance between too much water and too little water, a balance between overcrowded beds or just the right spacing for optimum growth. And the same thing applies to our bodies. It's all about a balance and not overdoing things. And this is the problem. People, coconut oil is a very good example. Suddenly, coconut oil is the huge rage, and I hear people are doing everything from gargling with it to goodness knows what else. And also, oh no, now because it's a good thing, I have to drink a cup of coconut oil a day. And you're going, whoa, that's not going to be good for you. So a very big message that I try and put across in the book is balance. So if you're going to have nut milk, yes, have some nut milk, but don't go overboard on nut milk. Balance it with other things. And balance it with, almond milk is the most popular, but you can make nut milk out of a wide variety. So choose ones that, do your research, choose ones that are grown locally, that you are finding a local supply and that isn't being shipped in from California or wherever they might be coming from.
Jane, the one thing also that intrigued me reading this was when I got to the section on herbs, you included a little footnote on speckworm. And we all know everyone's been talking about planting speckworm for its role as a carbon sponge and what it does for the environment. I wasn't expecting to find it in a book focused on cooking, though. Tell us how you eat speckworm in your diet.
Oh, speckworm is wonderful. I mean, the elephants, it's the diet of elephants. I mean, they absolutely love it. And you know, they're very definitely onto a good thing because, and also giraffes love it. It's not only healthy, but it's got the most wonderful, refreshing, tangy, lemony flavor. And it's full of moisture as well. And my favorite is, if you think of those flavors, and I love imagining flavors. I think this is why I enjoy cooking. I can be going for walking the dogs, and I'll be thinking about what I'm going to make that evening. And I'll imagine the flavors together. So if you think of speckworm being quite, it's tart, crunchy, crisp, similar in a way to the texture of an apple, but even has more moisture. And then you think, what will balance that? A creamy, salty cheese equals something like feta, and avocado for a creamy. So you literally, you just go and you harvest your speckworm leaves and you toss them into a salad and you balance it with a crispy apple, sweet apple, and then a saltiness with the cheese and then the creaminess with the avo. And you can also add them to smoothies, and you can also preserve them. You can actually preserve them in a jelly. Speckworm leaves make a wonderful jelly. There's so many things once you start understanding what something tastes like or what you can do with it. And then you start really experimenting in your own kitchen.
Quickly, before we run out of time, Jane, we must talk about the chapter on preserving food. As you said at the start, you love to be able to make your produce work for you all year round. And there's a whole chapter on bottling and drying and sterilizing the jars and what can be frozen and what works best with different methods. I mean, do you want to just give us a few basics there of the produce that lends itself best to that kind of preservation?
Okay, well, there's various different methods of preserving food, but one of the things that I've found in order to quickly whip up a healthy and satisfying meal, you need to have a well-stocked pantry. And this is where having on hand some dried and bottled food, things like, for example, coming up now, we've got summer coming up and we're all going to be growing squashes and marrows. And as anybody who grows vegetables and grows their own food knows, very quickly you land up with a glut of these things. And dehydrating is one of the simplest. All the bacteria thrive on moisture. all the bacteria that spoil our food, they thrive on moisture. They need moisture. Otherwise, they die. They won't even grow. So removing that moisture is one of the oldest methods of preserving, and also you can do it without using any electricity, both in the process of preserving it and keeping it long term. So for the squash, for example, you slice them up thinly as possible, dip them into a little mixture of some flavorful vinegar and soy, just to give a bit of salty flavor, and the vinegar helps preserve it, stop it turning brown. And you lay it out either on trays out in the sun, protected from hohos with a net, or else in a dehydrator until it's crispy. And then you seal it into a bottle and pop it on your shelf, and it's ready for you to use in the middle of winter when you're dying for some lovely flavor of summer squash. You pull those out, and voila, you've got a quick and easy meal.
And on that inspirational note, we'll have to wrap things up. Jane Griffith, always lovely to have you on the show. And thank you so much for joining us today to talk about the new book, which is called Jane's Delicious Superfoods for Super Health, published by Sunbird Publishers. It's available in stores now at around about 350 Rand a copy.